whether the provincial commissioner, Gauteng post, post number 2167, at the level of Lieutenant General, the post was advertised on the 5th of July 2010 and withdrawn on the 31st of August 2010 and was laterally filled with Lieutenant General M. Petros. Then there was Divisional Commissioner Supply Chain, post number 2168, at the level of Lieutenant General. The post was advertised on the 22nd of July 2010 and withdrawn on the 16th of September 2010 and was laterally filled with Lieutenant General G.J. Cruiser. Then there was the Cluster Commander, Tatle Home, Gauteng post, post number 2178 at the level of Major General. The post was advertised on the 30th of July 2010 and withdrawn on the 22nd of November 2010 and was laterally filled with Major General N.J. Ledwako. Then there's the Cluster Commander, Takamas Corp, Western Cape Post, post number 2182 at the level of Brigadier. The post was advertised on the 30th of July and withdrawn on the 7th of August and was laterally filled with the reinstatement of Brigadier A.D. Lincoln. Then there's the Provincial Head Inspectorate Northwest, post number 2185 at the level of Brigadier. The post was advertised on the 30th of July 2010 and withdrawn on the 12th of May 2011 and was laterally filled with the Brigadier S. Pretorius. Then there's the Station Commander Toriando in the Mpompo, post number 2196 at the level of Brigadier. The post was advertised on the 30th of July 2010 and withdrawn on the 18th of October 2010 and was laterally filled with the Brigadier A.R. Mlaudzi. Then there's the Section Head, Strategic Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation at Strategic Management Head Office. The post number 2211 at the level of Brigadier. The post was advertised on the 13th of October 2010 and withdrawn on the 1st of February 2011 and was laterally filled with Brigadier F.N. Menziwa. Then there's the Provincial Head, Human Resource Utilization, Free State, post number 2214 at the level of Brigadier. The post was advertised on 13th October 2010 and withdrawn on the 31st of December 2010 and was laterally filled with Brigadier P. Moloi. And finally, the Cluster Commander, Worcester Western Cape Post, post number 2234, at the level of Major General. The post was advertised on the 27th of January 2011 and withdrawn on the 14th of February 2011. And was laterally filled with Major General KZC Mkhize. Section 35 retirements, to provide the details, how did they qualify, what reasons, and how many were within Program 1. In response, the South African Police Service Act 1995 promulgated as Act Number 68 of 1995, makes provision for the service termination of employees in certain instances. And it reads as follows. The National Commissioner may, subject to the provision of the Government Service Pension Act, 1973, Act Number 57 of 1973, discharge a member because of the abolition of his or her post or the reduction in the numerical strength, the reorganization, or the readjustment of the service. And if for reasons other than the unfitness or incapacity of such member, his or her discharge will promote efficiency or economy in the service, or will otherwise be in the interest of the service. And in terms of these provisions, the services of employees can either be terminated in terms of Section 35A or 35B of the South African Police Service Act 1995. The following table provides a perspective on the number of senior and SMS employees whose services were terminated in terms of the provisions of the Act. In this table, we have the details with the names of the members, the provisions in terms of which the termination took place, the age at the stage of the termination or their discharge, the level that they were occupying when they were discharged, the subs costs related to such discharge, as well as the environment in which they were placed at the time of their discharge. The first is J.A. Jones, where there was a reorganization and the post was abolished, and he was discharged in terms of Section 35A at the age of 46.
Yes, ma'am. At this we've gone through the name. So, yes, maybe you can move forward. Probably it suffices to tell us what is the total of cost and what it means.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The total number it's 19 officers that were so discharged in terms of Section 35. The total cost it's 31.20 million. I'm not sure what Madam Chair means by indicating what that means. Okay.
Come back with follow-up questions.
Okay. Thanks. The next question on page 31, question 37, what criteria is used to determine suspensions with or without pay? In response, suspensions in the South African Police Service are regulated in terms of the Department's Discipline Regulations 2006, as gazetted number 643 of 3 July 2006. In these regulations, Regulation 13 provides for precautionary suspensions of the SAPS Disciplinary Regulations. Disciplinary Regulation 2006 indicates as follows. Starting with the 13.1, suspension with full remuneration or temporary transfer of an employee on account of misconduct. The employer may suspend with full remuneration or temporarily transfer an employee on conditions, if any, determined by the National Commission. The disciplinary guidelines, these were subsequently drafted to provide clarity to officers implementing this measure. These disciplinary guidelines further direct that this form of suspension or transfer may be considered if continued retention of service is likely to result in the employee committing further misconduct, may negatively impact the investigation, will put the employee in a position to hide, destroy, embezzle, or generally interfere in the case, creates a possibility that the employee may interfere with or intimidate witnesses, and they may impact negatively on service delivery. Now, it is important to note that suspensions are only considered in cases of serious misconduct. The aim of suspension is not to punish the employee, but rather to enable the employer to conduct the necessary investigation without interference. In all cases of suspension, legal services is consulted to provide an opinion on the nature of suspension that is to be applied. Regulation 13.2, dealing with suspensions without remuneration, the national or the provincial or the divisional commissioner may suspend the employee without remuneration if the commissioner, on reasonable grounds, is satisfied that the misconduct which the employee is alleged to have committed is misconduct as described in Annex A. This is indicated underneath. And that the case against the employee, it is so strong that it is likely that the employee will be convicted of a crime and be dismissed. Provided that before suspending an employee without remuneration, the employee is afforded a reasonable opportunity to make representations, the commissioner considers the representations and informs the employee of the outcome of the representations. The disciplinary process must be initiated within 14 calendar days of the date of the decision to suspend the employee without remuneration, and that if the disciplinary process is not completed within 60 calendar days from the commencement of the suspension, the question of continued suspension without remuneration must be considered by the commissioner, and the employee may again make representations which the commissioner must consider. The commissioner must take any decision on continued suspension and inform the employee of the outcome of the representations. A decision that the suspension continues may only be for a further period of 30 calendar days. Over and above the criteria...
Yes. Can I please interrupt you? Because I think this is what is contained in the document of the department, which is explaining the processes as they are, and probably going on to give us the names of those that were numbers and so on, which I think we can always refer to on our own. Can I request you, for us, can I request you to probably move to section 34, question 38, and just present that, and probably leave out the list there. And I think question 29 as well, I mean 39 as well. And request members to reach through if they have not. I had an opportunity to read through.
Okay, thanks. We'll do so, Madam Chair. I will start then on page 32, 37.4. The following tables provide an indication of the number of SMS members suspended with and without remuneration, as well as the number of other employees on levels 1 to 12 suspended with and without remuneration. In the SMS category, there is only one member on suspension with pay, and there are no members on suspension without pay. And the number of SMS members suspended with and without remuneration during the 2011-2012 period, that is the current financial year, it's a 2 at SMS with pay and none without pay. And the number of employees suspended with or without pay during the reporting period between levels 1 and 12, the totals are 205 who are suspended with pay and 664 who are suspended without pay. That gives us a total of 869 employees on suspension with or without pay. Moving on to the next question on democratic services, where terminated, what is the way forward? Let me sprint there. The current no longer applies because the contract was terminated sometime, I think, in July, in terms of which the democratic cleaners were providing a cleaning service to the SAPS, and at the end of that contract that they had with the SAPS, a decision was taken not to renew it, but instead to employ cleaners as a way of boosting the employment rate amongst those who are currently unemployed in our in terms when one looks at the current labor market economics. As a result, a decision was taken to make provision for the investment of 2,523 cleaners, all employed in terms of the Public Service Act at level one during the current financial year, and as a phased-in approach. Currently, a total of 2,520 cleaners have been appointed, and the organizational development environment is currently busy with a work study investigation to determine the actual future needs of the SAPS in this regard. Moving on to the next question, 39, equity profiling, male and female in the organization. Over the past three financial years, 2008, 2009 to 2010, 2011, the percentage of females in the department has increased from 30.5% as of the 31st of March 2008 to 32.6%. During this period, the department's female staff numbers increased by 10,404 from a total of 52,800 to 63,204, which represents a 50.4% of growth in the staff complement. Over the same period, the percentage of females in the senior management services increased from 20.7% as at 31st March 2008 to 28.3%. The numbers in the SMS increased by 62 to 196 out of a total of 693 senior managers. I'm not sure if a question for the members can, honorable members can also read through it, Madam Chair. Thanks, Madam Chair. Can I quickly, General Kwena will respond to the question on training, but there is one more question that was posed around the issue of payment of performance bonuses during 2010-2011 financial year. It has a longish answer, but in short, to make the answer short, the SAS used to pay incentives which were not so popular because of a number of complaints they received from various sectors, from both the side of the management and the side of the employees themselves. But overall, there is a performance, a 13th check bonus that is paid to members in the level 1 to 12 employment category. And the SMS category is not receiving performance bonuses because their salaries are structured and that is included in that process. Moving on to the disciplinary action aiding and escapee, as well as on the losses of firearms. There is on page 39, table 43, the totals of a number of members charged, which is 259. That were found guilty, 149, and members not found guilty, 85. And then there were 18 that were withdrawn, and there are 15 that are still pending. With reference to 43.2 regarding the losses of firearms, the actual figure that was initially given was 90, that is with reference to page 72 of the annual report. But there were actually 1,335 firearm losses that were recorded compared to 3,814 in 2009-2010. And the total of 227 members were charged in terms of the disciplinary regulations during the 2010-2011 financial year. And in the initial report, it appears as 90 members. It's actually 227 members. Of this total of 227 that were charged, 203 were found guilty, 43 were found not guilty, and 4 were dismissed. And then overall, out of these 1,335, we still have 786 cases that are not yet classified. What this means is that it has not yet been determined whether the losses were as a result of theft from members or as a result of negligence on the members. In other words, an investigation is still ongoing to make a determination in that regard. Madam Chair, I will now hand over to General Kwena to tackle the issue related to training.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I must indicate that this very same question was presented yesterday by General Mono when he was presenting, where even certain questions regarding detective commanders were put through to him for the committee to receive a response in writing. But I will proceed with detective training.
What is outstanding from that is the ideal figures for detectives, but that is interesting, so it's not necessary to go.
Thank you.
Indeed, as you frankly said, that it was presented yesterday, I don't think it was enough to present them today.
Thank you.
So you're
yes, I'm done, Madam.
Thanks, Madam Chair. That concludes the issues of the outstanding questions. I'm just not sure about the questions of the ideal number of detectives.
General Mahato from Organizational Development will respond to the ideal of the detectives.
Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members. The ideal figure for detective for the year 2010-2011 is reflected at 28,723. That is inclusive the specialized units as well.
Chairperson, it's really not a difficult question. We're not asking what the ideal for that year is. We're asking what is the ideal number of detectives that SAPS want. That's what we're asking. But,
yeah.
Ideally, what would you like to have? How many detectives?
Thanks very much. What we are doing, we have, in terms of the MTF, we determine the ideal requirement of personnel in terms of the police services. So I'm reading it in terms of the first financial year, the second financial year, ideally. So that is how we have prepared the response in terms of it.
Chairperson, that's not the question that was asked by this committee, and it's not the first time that we've asked this question. The question is not what you can afford. The question is what does the department need so that we can increase our conviction rate? That is the question. Ideally, in an ideal world, how many detectives does the South African Police Service need? It's a simple question. It's not what you can afford, it's what ideally. Sorry, the reason why this question was asked, first of all, is because when the criminal justice revamp was done, a number was suggested to SAPS, and SAPS rejected that number. So we want to know, ideally, what is the number that you want?
You know, Madam Chair, the way I look at this question is simple. It should be answered, in fact, by general standard, not by anybody, because as the head, he should be knowing. You don't need somebody there, because it's a simple question is, what is the complement of the detectives? If he does not know that, I would be surprised.
Chairperson, in this organization of ours, we have specific responsibilities. I'm responsible for human resource management. The chief operations officer, the organizational development is part of her responsibilities. This question I know you've posed previously on many occasions. We are working in terms of the resource allocation guide based on the figures that we are receiving from organizational development. So we are interacting with one another, but the responsibility is with that environment. So, and with the detectives themselves. So I am not in possession of that figure this morning. I will request that we give it to you in writing after consultation with the relevant people, because I did not have the opportunity to consult with them last night.
Thank you very much. It's really a very simple question. We would have expected that the department would know that when it comes to detectives, this is what we want to move towards.
Yes.
This is our vision. This is our dream. We want to have, given the resources, everything. We want to achieve that. And because if we have 1, 2, 3, 4, this is what we'll be able to do under the circumstances. This is what we were asking for. You know, you have these things in terms of budget. You know, we know the budget that you're going to have this year, but the budget that you want to have in other years, outer years and so on. And this is what we are asking for. What is your dream as detective, I mean, as SAP, when it comes to detectives? Because personally, and I think the committee agrees, that when it comes to SAP members, really, we have done more than enough. We can still have more. However, I think we have more. We have enough of SAP members. But do we have enough of detectives? That is the question. And that is the answer that we're expecting from the department, to say this is what we think we want. And on the basis of this, we think we'll be able to perform our duties and improve our detection rate, improve our court ready dockets, improve our conviction rate. This is the question, rate. However, let's continue. And can we allow you to please give us this figure? Please. Let's take, in fact, that was the question. I want to check General Dramat. We still have not received anything on the spending of the irregular expenditure. You promised that you're going to come back to us with a written response. And up to so far, we've not had any presentation on that one, as to what the $76 million was spent on. Do you have answers?
Madam Chair, I thought that it was covered in the presentation of General Kruger yesterday. General Kruger's presentation.
Yes, Jefferson, they did cover it. But because of time, we didn't go into it, but they did cover it.
Thank you very much for that. I did not note it. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on then. Can we then take questions from members? Honorable Ndlovu, Honorable Annelies, Honorable Kola Barnard, Honorable Reverend George, no, Honorable George, Honorable George, yes. Honorable Preacher George. Okay, let's proceed in that order, please.
Thank you, Jefferson, and thank you to Tunzima for presenting the document to us. The first question that I want to raise, Jefferson, I won't raise the names because there are so many names here. I just want to know the reason of advertising and then withdrawing. The reason. Because it seems as if there is something that has been done covertly in order to put somebody that you like to put in there. And the second question, Jefferson, I just want to know, maybe to the Deputy Commissioner Standard, that I thought the police were it's a career guidance department where people grow up in the department. What happened if Cindy Chukunga joined tomorrow? She's a metro at a hospital or whatever, and then she becomes a lieutenant general in the police. What happened to that? How does she grow in the department? She comes with a title or what? Because I thought that it's a career thing from bottom up, and the training that's supposed to be done, and the person just come in and fly in, and then becomes a lieutenant major or whatever. How can that be? That's the question that I want to raise. The second question, Jefferson, is it seems as if the office of the National Commissioner does have a staff that assisting him in the office, which I thought they are not police. Do they allow to wear uniform? And why?
Jefferson, I want to start off with the appointments. Can the department explain to us? Can I just say, I found it also interesting that yesterday certain things couldn't be presented to us because as a collective, the department's management have not seeing what is going to present it as. But today we take selective ownership of certain issues, and I don't take kindly to that. The issue of the appointments and the withdrawal, etc. Can the department explain what's the difference between lateral appointment and a transfer? That's the first thing. Second thing, I would be interested in, Chairperson, a quick rundown of every one of these positions and every one of these people who have been appointed in this manner, to know what were their position before they were appointed to that position and what were their rank before they were appointed to this position. Quick rundown of all of those. Then if I can move on to section 35. I remember General Stanley yesterday saying this is not something that is abused in the department. It was only done 3 times, but it's 19 times in this financial year. Now, and I mean, I don't know, I think there has been some sort of confusion when she said that. First question is this the total amount? Does this include the payments you've got to make to the pension fund? Can you tell us how many of this 19 who have received Section 35 were under investigation, whether internally for disciplinary hearing or externally in terms of criminal charges? Then I specifically want to know, General Price, before ex-General Price, before the Soccer World Cup, told all of us that he's going to retire. Now we find him as part of a Section 35. Has Section 35 become a way for subs to increase pension payouts to their own at this level? If not, explain to us what this is. And I'm not sure whether, because I don't know all the other individuals, but I would like to know which others of these are supposedly retirements and then become suddenly Section 35 so that we can get some extra money. If General Place is not a retirement, then I would also like to know on what grounds was he given a Section 35? I just want to get my last question. Chair, my last question that I have to ask in this regard. I see I can see a number of people that I know that were under investigation from this list. A number of them. So I would be interested to hear that response. Just can I ask the last question? It's a financial question, but we need that answer for our BRR report as well, Jefferson. Can we ask General Schutte for each program to tell us what they have asked Treasury for? The amount and the purpose in the adjustment appropriation. We know that you haven't had feedback yet, or final feedback yet, but what did you ask for? Do you have enough money? You can say for 31 million a year.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like some information about suspensions. I'm fully aware that the SAFs have ignored 95% of the ICD recommendations over the last year, but that will change once the IPED comes in. Now, in the last day or two, I've been most embarrassed to receive queries from the media asking why the SAPS member, who carried the bag of money, about, I don't know, 1.3 million odd, and tried to bribe the head of the Hawks and KZN, is now back at work in full uniform. And I actually don't know what to say to them. So, you know, the Hawks got huge credit for this. They set up a sting, and it's all tied in with a 60 million rand FIFA World Cup accommodation scam that went on with the SAPs and this someone else who was arrested. He apparently supplied the money, but then he also apparently paid for the birthday party of the provincial commissioner's husband. So there's a lot of things going on there, and it's very disconcerting when I don't know the answer as to why a person is not suspended immediately when they've been arrested and they're out on bail for major charges, for a case I think a kindergarten child could win in court. So please give me the answer. What are the rules and regulations that allow a person who's out on bail to come back in and sit at their desk as though nothing's happened, and then, of course, have free access to things in the offices which perhaps they should not be touching? I find it very disconcerting, and really, on occasion, the SAPS is its own worst enemy. You've got such huge credit as an organization for being honest and honorable and not taking off of Miami with the money, and yet now this. It knocks you back again. So I'd like an answer to that. And this investigation really is going like treacle. It's so slow. And I start getting the feeling it's being blocked from some area. The regulations on appointments, I think the Honourable Annelies has asked a lot of the questions that I would be interested in. But could you please explain what the regulations are in terms of promoting people and bouncing them up the ranks? We've seen it happening everywhere. A secretary is bounced into the SAPs up five ranks, so people she was making tea for one day are saluting her the next day. I don't know what that brings to the SAPs. I'm seeing it in many areas. A bodyguard bounced up six or seven positions into the SAPs. Now, if you work in the SAPs, I thought and I believe the regulation was you actually have to earn your right through the ranks as you go. I'm not understanding what's happening with this bouncing in of people. And in many instances, you can track it back to being somehow related to people in the top structure. So please explain that to me. I want to know the act. I actually have details of certain regulations. I want to hear it from you, how this is being allowed. It really all goes back to good governance. And then I think the Section 35 issue with General Price, I think that shocked all of us because we were all convinced he was retiring. And now we see him on this list. And I'd like to know if one gets additional benefits for being sent off on this now notorious Section 35. I mean, this is your Section 35 moment. It's really come out from under the carpet here. And I'd like to know how on earth someone who told us all he was retiring is now on this list of the 19 who've got this special dispensation. And indeed, there were people and are people being investigated. Whoop, give them a Section 35 and a fat pension and off they go. So please, just lay it out there and let us make up our own minds on what's being done with this Section 5 and who's being given who gives the final order as to who gets a Section 35 or not. Who takes that final decision? That's what I would like to know. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I must start by making this statement. I'm going to be very careful with this statement. You know, in life, there is nothing dangerous than exploiting regulations which were meant for good, but use them for your own nefarious things. You see, these regulations, there was a reason why the National Commissioner would be allowed to at a certain stage, to appoint people without. But the way it is done here, it's very clear that there's something wrong. Something very fishy. The first thing, you see, if you appoint people, especially to senior positions, it is always better for that organization, for those people to feel that I deserve to be here. But once people are appointed on the basis of something which is not known by everybody, firstly, you are creating unnecessary discontent in your organization. People are going to feel that if I was given a chance, I could have held that position. But even these which you have put in those positions, they are not going to be as loyal to the organization as they should be. Their loyalty is going to be more to you as an individual. You see, for instance, you said there are exceptional circumstances that warrant the deviation. You have not stated to us what are these exceptional thing that made the National Commissioner to appoint so many senior managers. Yeah, 20. What was this? I would also be interested to see, Madam Chair, they say the National Commissioner has recorded the reasons. He records this for who? Where? See, because it looks like he's got power. He must record to who? For who? Will we ever be able to see those records? You see, because there are many questions you talk about, which Babundogwe explained. You advertise a post. I've seen some of them. The post is advertised for 3 months. After 3 months, it's withdrawn. Surely, if the post was advertised, it means by the time you are withdrawing, my question is, were there no applications? What happened to those people who applied when you withdraw? Because some of them, I've looked at the date of application and the date of withdrawal. 2 months after the application, the after the advertisement, the application is withdrawn. Which is done normally in human resource. If people apply, you discover that those who applied, you did not find a suitable. You go what we call headhunting. But there's nothing that says that here. All of them, you advertise and then you withdraw. You advertise, you withdraw. You advertise, you withdraw. I mean, it's not a good reason. Section 35, are there no checks and balances? I mean, it looks like, you see, that's what I'm saying. The regulation is there for good reason. But in this case, it is very clear that the regulation is being misused. Are there no checks and balances? Who checks? Now, you see, for instance, people who are supposed to be retired, now they're giving Section 35. It means, I'm suspecting all of you probably you'll easily apply if you want to for Section 35. But also, General Dramat, 869 members suspended. I'm not looking at whether it's without pay or, but 869. And if you look at it, it is not good for the organization. Now, because the problem that you go to police stations, you find that there are few, they say, no, we don't have a full complement. But they can't feel that, they can't feel that complement because these people are still registered. But they are somewhere. Some of them are probably running their small businesses in supermarkets. Because I'm saying, what are you not going to do something about this thing? This is an organization, you must understand, that must, in this country, enforce laws to make sure that there's no corruption in this country, to make sure that there is law and order in this country. If they themselves don't respect the law, because if this suspicion is 860, it's too high. I would like you to not to do that, good general, you as the acting national commissioner or representative. What are you doing about this big number?
No, thank you, Chairperson. My first question relates to the various promotions on page 27 and page 28. Now, I just want to find out, in the SAPS, how does it work? When you go from one rank to the other, do you have to do a course for that? Is there a particular requirement? So there's a course you have to pass, and then you get your promotion? Or do you just get promoted as and when it's deemed necessary to promote a person? I'd also like that same question to be answered. Last week, we were told that quite a large number of people had been promoted into the new rank of lieutenant, and others into the rank of major. And we were also told of people, in fact, about 5,000 promotions were told about last week. So I'd like to get clarity on how do you get promotion. Then, on the Section 35s, have there been Section 35s issued for other ranks below the ranks that we're given here? Are there other people below that who've been removed or have left SAPS under a Section 35 notice? Those are the two questions. Oh, just the last thing is that you've also given us, we've been given the just a whole thing on firearms lost and so on. I may have missed it. I'm not sure if we've been told what has happened. Sorry. What? Yeah, but I'm not sure if we've been told what's happened to those people. I mean, for instance, in that table, I see that there's firearms lost in the toilet, which seems quite strange to me, how you lose it there. But what has happened to these people that have lost these firearms? I may have missed that in the presentation. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Commissioner Dramat. Can you explain to us, to me in particular, as to what the difference is between a person in terms of pension and payouts, monthly payouts and so on, and benefits, between a person who is granted Section 35 or a person who reaches the age of retirement and therefore retire from SAPS, a person who is fired from SAPS? What are the differences in terms of benefits and everything? And secondly, maybe it's the question that was asked by Honorable George, but I just want to emphasize, what exactly, specifically, were the exceptional circumstances that warranted the deviation from the normal route of advertising positions, allowing people to apply interviews and be appointed on the basis of that? What exactly were the exceptional circumstances? And can we be provided with written records or recorded reasons for the deviation as it is according to these regulations? Particularly, I'm referring these questions to the full field in terms of the regulations 45.9. I'm asking this question because, in fact, we would also want to know as to what was their performance in the positions that they were holding before. Honorable, General Drama.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the question. The specific managers responsible will assist in terms of the responses to all the questions. But I just feel, Madam Chair, that perhaps one should make the point around the investigations and give some assurances that there aren't any investigations that we are aware of that is being blocked deliberately. I can give that assurance. There is no such investigations that are being blocked or deliberately delayed. At least none of them that's under my direct supervision. There's just a bit of uneasiness I have around the question relating to the omni of the individuals who are under investigation, Madam Chair. It becomes difficult for one to respond and indicate when people haven't been brought before a court to indicate that this individual and that individual is under investigation. There's just a little bit of difficulty that one would have in responding to that specific question. Perhaps we could indicate if there's any of them that were brought before court. Madam Chair, so.
Then don't give us the names, at least give us the numbers of these 19. Whether it's internal investigations, because I know, for instance, of some disciplinary hearings that were supposed to take place, or whether it's criminal charges pending, coming before court.
We could attempt at least with the numbers, Madam Chair. But if you can allow all the managers to respond, to assist with the responses.
Madam Chair, I thought there was a specific question because that must be answered by you. You are the acting commissioner. What were these exceptional circumstances? Surely you should know that. That's number one. Number two, I'm not entirely comfortable with your answer, General. For instance, sometime last year, the General was blazing here and telling us what's wrong. Ter Blanche, Stella did in supply chain management. The next thing they gave them, Section 35. You see, the way it was put, it was if there was concrete evidence for wrongdoing on their part. But the next thing they were given, Section 35.
I just want to correct one thing. The National Commissioner was not blazing. He reported to this portfolio committee, the National Commission. I'm just correcting the trick.
No, thanks. I think when the line managers respond to the personnel, we'll be able to reflect on those exceptional circumstances. I just want to correct also, Madam Chair, that one is standing in here and leading the delegation. The National Commissioner is still in the country. He's still the National Commissioner, so I'm not the acting National Commissioner.
Thanks, Madam Chair. May I request that this question that we be provided with time to go back to the records to look at exactly what is recorded there so that we can provide a concise response to your question regarding the exceptional circumstances.
Chairperson, if I may. The Chairperson in the last instance specifically asked for the exceptional circumstances of each one and whether you can be provided.
Whether you can be provided with those documents, and you are referring to those four specifically that have been moved from one level to another level.
those documents is available, Jefferson. I don't have it with me today, but I can get somebody to fax it through. We can give it to you through before the end of the day. That four documents, it's available. Before the end of the day, we will give it to you, Jefferson. Safe to say, Jefferson, when we deal with appointments on this level, the issue that was raised by the Honourable Member with regard to people flying in and going to higher levels, we have this appointment process of ours are regulated through the South African Police Service regulations, Regulation 44, the Regulation 45, which is talking to appointment and promotion. It's been regulated through our National Instruction of 2005, 2 of 2005, the National Instruction of 3 of 2005, where we are dealing with the assessment center process, our National Instruction 6 of 2005, who is dealing with 1 to 12. At the time when we are reporting on this annual report, that instruction was still applicable. As I was saying last week or yesterday, I can't recall, but during this process I've indicated that we have renegotiated the promotion process and a new agreement has been reached to promote the lieutenants and the majors and the new ranks that have been implemented, which is 2 of 2011. All those documents are on our intranet in any case. And then we also have our National Instruction 4 of 2010, which is dealing with the appointments of post to salary level 13 to 15. So those are the issues with regard to the appointments, the processes that we are following. These four individuals that we are referring to, Jefferson, is also in this Regulation 35.9, which the National Commissioner is satisfied that the employee qualifies in all respects for the post. There are exceptional circumstances, and such deviation is in the interest of the service. Now, as I'm saying, those has been recorded in those documentation, which we will provide. But if people are promoted, they must comply with the inherent requirements of the post which they're going to be appointed to. So we are looking at their performance, their previous performance, their performance assessments, which we call the performance assessment plan, which is the PEPs. They must have received a satisfactory mark with regard to that process. This process of the SMS is decentralized to the provinces, but the ultimate approval is at the national office. So the panels are constituted in the provinces when we do promotions or appointments. And then it comes to the national office for ratification. Level 1 to 8, the provincial commissioners can deal with it themselves. 8 and above comes to the national office for approval. So for final approval, because those are also post-bound, because the post must be vacant and it must be a funded vacancy as well. Now, in terms of the issue raised with regard to the majors and the captains and the lieutenants, the criteria that we have reduced for this specific environment was, one was the qualification, at least the qualification of NQ4, or an equivalent qualification. In this case, because there was a large number of people with over 20 years of service in this environment, in the specific ranks, we have used seniority. Most senior members per each race group limited to the number of posts, uninterrupted service in the SAPS for minimum of at least 1 year, as at June 2010, and then performance, at least PEP rating of satisfactory. They must be suitable, may be affected by, must not have any previous convictions or pending cases against them, and they should have been willing to move from one and be willing to be transferred where the vacant posts are in that specific environment where they need to meet the requirements of the post. So that was the conditions with regard to those appointments. Jefferson, these appointments, it is true, people can skip ranks as long as they meet the inherent requirements of the post. It is, there's no such thing that they must move from one level to the other to the other. You also find it in other the government departments. It's not only happening in SAPS only that people can move. It's an open advertisement. We also invite people to apply externally, so people can come in on the level of Major General or Lieutenant General if they meet the inherent requirements of the post and they went through the assessment center and they conform to all the requirements. It's only those that we have talked about that does not go through the assessment center if the National Commissioner is using this specific regulation which give him the authority to appoint people without advertising. Those people are not going through our assessment centers. Chairperson, with regard to the Section 35, I just want to indicate that last week I also indicated that it's 19 people. I've never said it was only in three cases because we have responded in writing also on a question in Parliament that it's 19 people that have been discharged in terms of this section of the Act. So, Chairperson, so maybe I've not come over clearly on this one, and my apology if I said three, but I think I did not say three at some stage. Let me just check the questions. There was also a question whether the people in the National Commissioner's office that are using uniform, which are the Public Service Act personnel, that's not the case. Public Service Act personnel are not allowed to wear uniform. It's only Police Service Act members that are allowed to use to wear uniform. There was a question, what is the difference between a lateral appointment and a transfer? Chairperson, a transfer has been dealt with in terms of our transfer policy. So if we identify an individual that can enhance service delivery or for whatever reason to be in the interest of the service, we can also then request that individual to be transferred from one post to another post. The lateral appointment and the lateral transfer is more or less the same thing because now when we move him from point A to point B and there is no promotion involved, then it's a lateral appointment. Yeah, it's the same thing. That's what I'm saying. There's not much difference between the two because you move him from one place to another place. You appoint him in another post. Then the post that person has currently occupied, if he meets the requirements of the post, where to be moving that person, Chairperson. So that's the issue with regard to...
If I can just add more clarity on that, it's as opposed to vertical movement, where it entails a promotion. With lateral, you are moving from a position to another equal position, so you are basically remaining on the same level. As opposed to on a vertical movement where you are moving to a higher position.
It's clear, but then why the differentiation between transfer and lateral appointment?
Sometimes the lateral appointments entail people coming from outside of the department. Yes, it's lateral appointment, it's lateral movement. I guess it's the same phenomenon articulated in different ways. Or in so many ways, but it's the same phenomenon.
In fact, I don't know what is it that we are debating. We have a report here, 2010-11, lateral appointment. Why must be talking theory? People, according to the report, were laterally appointed. And the question is, what would have been the difference between, say, you transferred them? Petros, for instance, Patlani, for instance, they are regarded as lateral appointments. The question is to say, what is the difference? Is it one and the same thing? Because we're not talking about people coming out from other departments. We're talking about people moved from human resources, Patlani, to forensic, that was from Western Cape to Gauteng, simple, straightforward. That would be a transfer. You are saying a general standard. It's almost one and the same thing. So we must continue.
The post that you've requested us to go quick run through on this one, let me just open my file at this page. I think, and we have mentioned in this response, Chairperson, that give a clear indication if people have moved from one level to another level. For instance, if we look at the first one, the COO, we indicated that she was identified as the most suitable candidate for the post and was promoted to the rank of Lieutenant General. Before that, she occupied the rank of a Major General. In terms of our response, you will indicate that Major General Magwenya was identified as a suitable candidate for the post and was promoted to the rank of Lieutenant General.
Chairperson, so, just for clarity, that it's not necessary what only the rank. What were they doing? What were their jobs in the department before then? What were their responsibilities?
Chairperson, General Magwenya was, as I've indicated, we will give those things to you in writing later today. Those exceptional circumstances is recorded, but she was in the department. She was at the division personnel management in different occupations there. So she was acting as the divisional commissioner at some stage for a long period in the division personnel management. Prior to that, she was also in the ministry as an administrative support to the minister. And then she was transferred to the South African Police Service at some stage. Before she went to the minister's office, so I'll have to go back on the history also, she was operational officer in the police service. So she had exceptional circumstances with regard to administrative abilities, and that's the reason why this was exceptional to appoint her in this post at the National Commissioner's Office. She was also acting there in the National Commissioner's Office for quite some time before this post were in fact formed. She was dealing with all the issues in the office of the National Commissioner, and as a result of her performance there, she was also appointed in this post. But I'll give you that document later today, Chairperson. The same with, what is the other one? It's General Molefe. He is in the legal services all along, and I must also point out, maybe before I go to Molefe, these people have also... their qualifications and their skills were also taken into consideration when we appointed them in this post. The same with General Molefe. He was acting since the absence of the termination of services of Mthimkhulu in that environment, and he was also working in the office of the National Commissioner for quite some time before this appointment has been made. With regard to the Western Cape one, General Van Vieren was at the National Head Office. During this process, why you asked some honorable member asked, why are you advertising and why are you withdrawing posts? You'll see, Chairperson, in this organization of ours, today a post is vacant, tomorrow it's no longer vacant. Then you can fill these posts laterally because you have people that you can employ in those environments. That's the reason why we withdrawn in those advertisements. Chairperson, there's lots of movement in the organization. People are retiring. People, services are terminating. Some people request for transfers, then posts become vacant. So that's the reason. Before we finalize this process, if there is people that we can move laterally, then we do the movement laterally to those vacant posts. So as I'm going through these ones, I can explain on each one what was the reason for withdrawing and then fill it laterally. So for instance, the one in the Western Cape, that one of Van Vieren, he was previously in the organizational development. Prior to that, he was in the detective environment as well as in the crime intelligence environment. So this post, after it has been advertised, became vacant, and this person requested a transfer to the vacant post, which was then approved that he can go to this vacancy. The one with regard to the Kulu, she was at PSS. She was removed from PSS. She was approached and said that we need your services at Division Financial and Administration Services. All these people receive a notice. They get 7 days to respond on the notice, and they accept or they don't accept. And ultimately, in terms of the transfer policy, once you went through that process, the final decision still remains with the National Commissioner. So she was transferred to the Finance Division from PSS. The one with regard to this is the next one, the third one that have been promoted. We have received a request from the Provincial Commissioner based on his transfer to Gauteng to consider this Brigadier Sabia based on the motivation that he has submitted to us, and both based on the motivation that we have received from the Provincial Commissioner for this exceptional circumstances, and that he wants this specific individual that can enhance the service delivery in that province. He was then promoted based on that exceptional circumstances document that I will also provide during the course of the day. This Brigadier Mohlak Motlagelwa, he was previously at the Office of the Minister. He was then identified to be for this post laterally. In our environment, they had personnel management, so he was also then appointed in that post. The one of the Northwest, Provincial Commissioner Mbombo, when we advertised the post, we realized that she has one of the applicants that applied.
General Stella, I thought you were going to talk to the form, and I think you've done that, haven't you?
I did, Jefferson, but my understanding was that she wants a quick, that the honorable member wants a quick rundown on each one of these names. That was my understanding.
I don't think so, really, because it's going to take long. I think we're more interested in these promotional ones. Yes, that meant vertical, you know, movement and not the lateral movement.
I was just going to say this, but Madam Chair, my worry is what Commissioner Standard is saying. Because you must remember, so human resource is not only applying to police or that our department. If you advertise a post, say you discover, like you said, why did you not tell this gentleman or this lady to apply? Because if it's after 2 months, surely it means there are people who have advertised, who have applied. Why did you not say this person, even if you know, because the applications, why do you withdraw? Because you could tell this person, Jovi, yes, assuming when Jovi comes to me and say, their phone is too, I say, Jovi, okay, Jovi, apply, I say, who apply, she, because short pieces. Why withdraw? Because you are also tampering with the labor laws. What about other people who have applied, especially if they are thinking, if it's 2 months, it means it's going to be a full period, then you withdraw.
And General Stan, are you saying exceptional? These people had what other people did not have in terms of meeting the requirements, experience, qualification, performance, and all. Are you telling the portfolio committee that these people had what others, none in the department, had? Is this what you're saying?
Jefferson, this is not what I'm saying. I'm saying these persons have been identified and they have exceptional circumstances. So they might be other people that have the similar qualifications and similar experience. But this regulation makes provision that the National Commissioner can deviate from the advertisement process.
And in fact, it goes on to say,
be exceptional. So there must be exceptional circumstances.
That's correct.
You know, and that is what we are looking for. And that is why we are asking this question, to say, indeed, we must be convinced that in this case, the circumstances were exceptional, you know. And that is what we tried to get. It was somebody who at some stage was a minister. I'm making an example. I'm not saying that it was a minister. And none in the department had ever been a minister. And we wanted somebody with a history of having been a minister before. And that is exceptional. Or qualifications that are beyond any other person, I want to believe. And that is what we're looking for, to say, what were these exceptional circumstances? From what you say, I'm sitting here listening, I've met many of the department's officials here coming before the portfolio committee. I'm still wondering as to what is exceptional. And that is what we will wait for when the letters come. Honorable, I want us to move on. Honorable Greg, Honorable Swati.
No, Chair, it's not a question. It's not something that I think we can get a response on today. But I've been listening to just the answers that we've been given, just in terms of how promotions take place, et cetera. And I think it's something that we have to look into. You know, as far as I know, and as far as I don't know if it, I think it's still the case. But if I can use the Defence Force as an example, you can't go from one rank to another without doing a course. You don't just get promoted. There's a course you have to do. If you pass that course, even then, there's no guarantee that you'll get promoted. Because I think in the Defence Force, they only do a certain number of promotions a year. But if you want to get from being a private to a Lance Corporal, you have to do a course. The only time that I know that you can automatically become a lieutenant or without even having to do a course is when you have a degree. But I'm saying, I think really, and that's what I'm saying, we don't need a response now, but I think it's something that we have to look at. I think we need to look at other police forces and police services around the world. How do they handle their issue of promotions? I was listening, you know, this example that you can just come in as a, if there are exceptional circumstances, there will always be. That we need to understand, we need to accept. But I think it's the general rule. I think we as a committee really need to look at this issue of promotions. On the one hand, we are glad that the rank of lieutenant and major is being used. But on the other hand, I then have to say, but you know, how were these filled? What was the criteria? And so I'm just making a comment that I think as a committee, it's something we really have to look at. Because, let me stop there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I also want to add something on with regard to the exceptional cases where the commission is actually given that opportunity to actually to exercise that. But my question is, because when we're talking of exceptional, we need to know how many cases, how many positions are we talking about? But in this case, I see there are so many people who have been promoted on that basis. So I just want to maybe to get clarity, because when we're talking of exceptional, I think it can be two or three positions. But if we're talking of more than three, maybe we're talking of 10 or 15 or 20. Now, there are so many positions now for that course. So I just want to find out, when we talk of exceptional, actually, how many positions are you actually talking about to qualify for that exceptional? I want to get clarity with regard to the advertising posts that actually were actually terminated after 2 months. That what happened to those who have applied? If you terminate, you also terminate the application. Thank you.
Commissioner Sam, I want us to proceed, members. I think we're eating on Peter's time now.
I just
was waiting for an answer about Colonel Maddow and why he was back at work. I didn't hear an answer. Thank you.
And General Stanley,
as a matter of fact, we were informed, allegations, of course, informally so far as matter, that some of the people that are regarded as having been promoted on the basis of their exceptional circumstances had reports of poor performance from their immediate supervisors. What is exceptional there? That is what we were told as allegations. We will still be looking for exceptional circumstances. We'll await that. But, however, we'll also request that you check from the files of these people, if indeed it is true, that they had reports of poor performance. Can we proceed?
Chairperson, I will check that because those, as I was indicating to you, those two people were being requested by the provincial commissioner, and then I will have to check the performance because the performance are also captured on our system. So I'll provide that information before the end of the day. With regard to those, what happened when it was advertised and withdrawn in our advertisement, we are indicating right from the beginning in all our advertisements, there's no obligation on us to fill an advertised post. So all the candidates that do apply do get that right from the beginning, that there is no obligation on the department to fill the post if through the advertisement, Chair. I'm talking about the advertisement, because on all the advertisement, that clause is brought into there. So when you withdraw it, you withdraw it. Then those process does not proceed any longer. Then, Chairperson, I'm not sure with regard to the facts of Colonel Meadow, because that process has been dealt with at the Provincial Office of KwaZulu-Natal. I'm told that this person, after he appeared in court and he was out on bail, and he was served with a notice immediately of suspension, and that the Provincial Commissioner is in the process of suspending that person. So I'll just follow up later today and confirm, but I'm told that they have served the notice of suspension on the member already. Then, Chairperson, with regard to the Section 35, I think General Dramat already indicated that we are not in a position to indicate whether there was an investigation or not an investigation at this point in time. I just want to indicate to you, Chairperson, this is not an individual sitting on his or her own and deciding to award this Section 35. These Section 35s, the employer can initiate it, and the employee can also apply for the Section 35. What normally happens is, when we receive such a request, when it's not employer-initiated, then the National Commissioner, myself, the COO, and the Deputy National Commissioners, in which environment that specific person is working or relevant to their specific environments, will discuss this thing. We also have the legal services representative, executive legal officer, sitting with us to weigh the pros and cons with regard to each application. And then ultimately a decision has been taken based on this clause in the Act, whether to award or whether not to award this Section 35.
The 19, how many had applied of this 19?
Chairperson, I will just go through the list and I'll give you an indication, because some of them were employer-initiated and others have applied, but I don't have that right now with me. So it's not indicated on the list, so I'll just have to go back to each file quickly.
The difference between, and in terms of benefits, between a person who is granted this, who is dismissed, and a person who retires at the age of 14, in terms of benefits?
Jefferson, I'm going to ask the CFO to assist me with that question, because as I've indicated yesterday with regard to the individual that we've discussed yesterday, there's certain rules that kick in terms of the GEPF rules. There's certain rules that kick in terms of the South African Police Service Act, as well as the Basic Employment Conditions of Service Act that kick in when we do the calculations of this post, of this
discharges.
I understood General Dramat to say that they won't be in a position to give us the names, and we've agreed that they can give us the number of people that were under investigation, not that it's not available currently.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to a comparative analysis, we've done some in the past. I don't have it with me, but normally payments are a function of time. So if you apply Section 35 earlier, and there's a number of years where the person would have earned a salary by staying in the employ of the state, the scenario changes. So it is not just a simple scenario. If the person still would have stayed, because your monthly payments are less if you're in the retirement, vis-a-vis also your lump sum. So if you still would have earned a salary in the employee, let's say for 15 years, the scenario would be different than if you take it Section 35, let's say in terms of if you're over 57. So it differs in terms of the payment because of normally you have a lump sum in the Section 35 which are higher than obviously stay in the employee of the state and retiring at the end, but you have the moment you retire, you have a lower monthly income or a payment by the state, GPF or other. So it's a comparative analysis, and let me not speculate further. I just wanted to indicate these principles per se.
You are seeing a commissioner stand, you remain in the employ of the department, and what are the benefits that you get in terms of salary, in terms of pension, in terms of everything at that time when you are remaining in the employment of the department? What portion of your salary do you continue to get if you ever do, or what exactly do you get every month?
As I said, I think we have to put a calculation on the table. But to give you an indication, if you have a salary, an annual salary package, only 60% thereof, for instance, in the SMS salary, is your basic salary. And only from that basic salary, a certain percentage becomes pension, monthly pension at the end of the day, obviously taking into account your years that you have service, but in this regard. If you would have stayed in the employ, you would have earned a higher salary per month for a longer period of time if you were a younger person. What I'm saying to you...
Commissioner, don't tell us about people that are staying, because those, they are employed by the department. You're talking about the 46-year-old who is granted Section 35 and has a salary level. And out of that salary level, he earns a salary every month. Can you tell us as to what is going to happen in that scenario? For how long? And what will be the benefit and what will be the loss from the department or by the department?
But Chair, the moment you take a person in employ of the state, you have to take in the number of years that the person would have worked. You can't just take it per annum for 1 year.
I don't understand this. We're talking about Section 35, isn't it? And the person, you Commissioner Stander, you have said this person will remain in the employ of the department or employment of the department.
No, 35 does not remain in the employee. What I said was, if you have to compare it against something, you can only compare it, as I understand the question, against somebody or the same person, if that person would have stayed in the employ of the state. That is the point that I tried to describe.
Let's not compare. Let's talk about the person who takes Section 35. What are the issues in terms of benefit?
As a 47-year-old, you put an example of that on your Section 35, why would I prefer to take a Section 35 rather than a retirement? What is the advantage? Simple.
As General Stoner indicated, it could be employer-initiated. Yes, it could be employer-initiated, but it could also be applied for by the employee to get away or whatever. I don't know. The fact is there may be various reasons. But it over time, and that is my whole point, it would not necessarily be more beneficial. We would have to calculate taking the same person over a number of years. and then we will be able to say to you. But normally, if you take a Section 35, a number of years are added. A number of years are added, which increases then your payment.
Your come in a general schedule, because I think you're not responding. You have Hela. He earned the salary. What is he earning now? How much did he earn when he was the divisional, the deputy national commissioner? What is he earning now every month, if he's earning anything?
Per month, he's earning lower, much lower, but he did, receive a lump sum.
What is the percentage of what he's earning to what he was earning when he was in the employment of the department?
Chairperson, I don't have it with me at this point in time, but it's lower. But he does have a lump sum, which he did not have when he was in the employ.
To make a suggestion in order for us to move forward. Because, I mean, General Price is working on my nerves today. It's because he's not here, so he can answer why such 13 stores are in the state they are. The fact of the matter is you've got two exact examples on your schedule. The one of General Price, who obviously was to his advantage to take a Section 35 rather than a retirement. Simple question. Why was it to his advantage? What makes the advantage and what is the financial impact of that advantage? Second one is 47-year-old who, let me stop there. What is the advantage for that person to take the Section 35? Wait. It's a simple issue. It's obvious if I apply as a 57-year-old for a Section 35 and the department adds to my salary, it adds to my years, that there will be an advantage for me than just simply taking my retirement. But as a 47-year-old, there are also advantages because now I'm still economically active. I'm getting paid my pension, I'm getting paid a lump sum, and the department is adding years to my service. So it's a simple issue of what are the financial benefits? Why would I, as an individual, prefer to take a Section 35 rather than having going on pension? There are individuals sitting in this room from SAPS who have said to us, I hope they will give me a Section 35. Let's be honest about this, General Schutte. Let us not drag these issues from you. And don't give us technical answers. Give us clear answers on these issues.
We will close it at this. Commissioner Tramat, you're going to get these answers and give us specifics. When we close our meeting with CETA, because you don't want to respond to our questions, SAPS will come back and give us specific answers. And therefore, the meeting for now with SAPS is adjourned until after the CETA meeting.
Sorry, Chair.
We'll be meeting with we're going to take a break, a 15-minute break, and come back and Sita will start with the presentation.
I will find him. I know I've seen it from the meeting, but...